117 years ago, about this time of year, a British journal called Beaton's Christmas Annual published a short novel. It was titled A Study in Scarlet, and the characters introduced then would eventually change the course of popular culture. It was the first appearance of the great consulting detective Sherlock Holmes and his trusty friend Dr. John Watson. The author, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, became one of the most celebrated men in British literature. Through 4 novels and 56 short stories, Doyle enthralled his readers, and Sherlock Holmes became an enduring icon whose presence is still felt. The Holmes stories, known as the canon, have inspired such serious study that they gave birth to what's known as Sherlockian scholars. These people, who delve into every detail of Holmes's life and times, will be of good cheer this holiday season, because Norton has just published the new annotated Sherlock Holmes. Leslie Klinger is the editor of this huge 2-volume set, and he's in the studio. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Klinger, is it possible for you to explain why Sherlock Holmes has remained popular for so long?
I think there's multiple reasons. The first reason, I believe, is the character of Holmes. He's this man who knows everything, always in command, and does the right thing, believes in his own brand of justice, doesn't necessarily follow the rules of law or even the rules of society. Second, we have Dr. Watson, the wonderful, intelligent, loyal, dependable Watson, the perfect friend, always there, and he gets to hang around with Sherlock Holmes. So I think we enjoy hanging around with Holmes and Watson. That's part of it. I think the other part of it is a fascination with the Victorian age, a time that we have to some extent a sort of misplaced nostalgia for, but a time that is vitally important to our own culture and our own understanding of history. And the stories really give us a perfect snapshot of Victorian times.
Mm. And we, of course, get all those qualities in Sherlock Holmes and Watson that we all want to have, his acute observational skills. And we also get the buddy movie, the original buddy movie.
Yes. And of course, the stories had an immense influence on the whole genre of mystery detective fiction. And there are those who read them for that reason, to sort of see where all these things came from. The sophisticated modern audience is sometimes a little taken aback by finding out that the butler did do it in one story and so on. But these are where those cliches came from.
Now, how were the stories received when they were first published? Were they immediately a hit?
The first two books, Study in Scarlet and Sign of the Four, had, I would say, lukewarm receptions. Sign of the Four did better than the first one, but the real popularity came with the publication of short stories that was eventually collected as The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes and The Memoirs of Sherlock Holmes. That was in 1891 in the Strand magazine through 1893. These were immensely popular. The circulation of the magazine zoomed, and there were fans everywhere, England, America, and very quickly abroad.
When did you first read a Holmes story?
I must have read them as a kid, but they didn't really make a big impression on me until I reread them in the Baring Gould annotated Sherlock Holmes edition when I was in law school. I was desperate to read something other than law books, and I discovered this wonderful world.
Now, in 1967, William S. Baring Gould published the 2-volume annotated Sherlock Holmes. It's become the cornerstone of everyone who collects Sherlock Holmes books, has Sherlock Holmes books in the library. Here you are with another annotated version. Why? Why now?
Baring Gould, first of all, is finally out of print after all those years, and I believed that it needed to be updated in a number of respects. First, Baring Gould had adopted a kind of eccentric order for the stories. It was his own chronology of the order in which the events and the stories occurred. It made it very difficult to find the stories. The footnotes dwell a great deal on issues of chronology, which fascinated him. They're a little idiosyncratic. I wanted to put out an edition that, first of all, reflected an additional 37 years of scholarship that's been published. Second, I wanted it to be much more illustrated than the Baring Gould edition. And third, I wanted it to appear in a more accessible order. Fortunately, Norton agreed, and the result is on the shelves.
37 years of scholarship. Your notes are pretty extensive in this 2-volume set. How much research did you do, and how much did you draw on other people's work?
Oh, I drew very heavily on other people's work. I don't claim to be a great Sherlockian thinker. I claim to be a person with a lot of perspiration who went ahead and compiled and tried to present a balanced view of a lot of opposing schools of thought on virtually everything. Where we did add a lot of new material was on Victorian culture and literature and history and government and things like that, something really underrepresented in the Baring Gould work.
The illustrations in here, the representations of Sherlock Holmes, you have all the original illustrations by Sidney Paget for the Strand magazine. They're in the book. Now, how did Sidney Paget get the job of illustrating Sherlock Holmes?
Actually, he was hired by the Strand magazine by accident. They had heard of this great artist named Paget. They sent over a commission. They meant his brother, Walter, but by accident it got to Sidney. Sidney fortuitously got the job and produced beautiful illustrations. We also have in the book, by the way, all the American illustrations by Frederick Dorr Steele. Not quite all, almost all the Frederick Dorr Steele illustrations. And a number of other obscure illustrations that have come from American newspapers.
We have to talk about the Sherlockian scholar. I mean, this is sort of a category all in its own. I mean, there's some people who devote an inordinate amount of time to the whole idea of exploring these arcane details of the Holmes stories. And actually, they operate under what you call the gentle fiction, essentially that Holmes was a real person, the stories were really written by John Watson, that Conan Doyle was Watson's literary agent. I mean, I imagine these people now going after the book that you've written. I mean, tell us about these scholars. How devoted are these people?
Well, it's a game that Dorothy Sayers described as requiring one's tongue firmly in one's cheek. It has to be played with the seriousness of a game of cricket at Lord's, she said. But I think it's a way to approach the stories that really makes them much richer. When we approach them as biography or history, we get to pay serious attention to the cultural background and learn a lot more about the Victorian age and think about how these two men lived in that time.
Is it literature? In the introduction, I referred to him as, you know, one of these lasting names in British literature. Do you consider it literature?
Absolutely. I'm not sure how to define it, but I think when you look at the fact that it's now in over 80 languages and the stories have been continuously in print for 117 years, how else should we define literature?
I think we all have maybe a visual idea of Sherlock Holmes, not only from the illustrations that we've seen, but from the countless portrayals that have been on screen, have been on TV, have been on stage, and of course radio. You know, we had this
advertising
impression. Advertising. Oh, yes, absolutely. Innumerable. Do you have a favorite Holmes?
Oh, of course. My favorite is Jeremy Brett, although I have to explain it as being only partly attributable to Brett's brilliant acting. The other part, and I think he really did capture the bohemian, over-the-top nature of Holmes, not always the world's most pleasant person to be with, but I think also that series presented, first of all, the first time really ever that Dr. Watson was done correctly. David Burke and Edward Hardwick, who both played that part, presented an intelligent Watson, one that you could understand why Sherlock Holmes might want to be with. In addition, the scripts closely followed a lot of the stories, and I give them high marks for that. Nobody else has really tried to do that in film. Everybody tries to tinker. Radio, by the way, has done even more. There's a wonderful BBC series that has followed closely the stories, and all 60 of the stories have actually been produced for radio.
Hmm. Jeremy Brett told us that he actually, as an actor, had to create an inner life for Sherlock Holmes because, frankly, not a lot of it was provided in the original material. And I recall him saying things like he was raised in, obviously, a Victorian household where there was not a lot of warmth and human contact. He was given cold baths and he was washed with a rough face cloth. Is this consistent, do you think?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we don't know very much about Holmes's childhood, and I suppose it's as equally interesting a speculation as Nicholas Myers, who suggested that as a young man, Holmes burst in upon his mother having an affair with his mathematics tutor, who became Professor Moriarty in his fevered imagination.
I guess we can just make up anything we want prior to the original publication date of that original story more than, 117 years ago.
And many have, and of course they haven't stopped there. They've tried to fill in the various gaps in the stories and supply their own tales, including, for example, the wonderfully successful series by Laurie King, taking Holmes post-retirement into the 20th century, where he partners with and eventually marries a young woman.
Leslie Klinger is the editor of the new annotated Sherlock Holmes published by Norton. Thanks so much for coming in.
A pleasure.
A gallery of Sherlock Holmes images plus a 1991 interview with the Sherlockian actor Jeremy Brett are at npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.
Weekend Edition Sunday is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. You can hear any story from today's show or previous shows online at npr.org. Just click on Archives. This is NPR.